Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Your official station to talk Giants. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 304, McMonagle here with you on The Fan. I mentioned Todd Bowles and the mistake to not go for the two-point conversion and the win against the defending two-time champion Kansas City Chiefs and to go into overtime and play for overtime. But I didn't hear that cut Marco just played until just now, that because of the wet conditions, they chose to play for overtime because of the wet conditions. Mm-hmm. What the hell does that mean?
Well, you can't try to go for it in one play. It's too wet.
You can't trust anyone.
Play another 10 minutes,
it would
be better.
Slip is that the point? Like on any one given play, you could slip and fall down because of the wet conditions?
Right.
But over the course of like the overtime, even if you slip and fall on one play, you have the next play to make up for it? Like,
right. Yes.
That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. I mean, you have an opportunity to win that game. You are not going to beat Patrick Mahomes in overtime. You are not the better team. You're lucky to be there tied. You're lucky to have an opportunity to make a two-and-a-half-yard play to win the game against the Chiefs, and you're making decisions on the field being wet?
Look, see, this is where
he's
Todd
Bowles... He's full of it.
Again, this is where Todd Bowles
scared.
And most coaches... Just say... I believe in my defense.
Yeah.
Say that.
Yeah.
I don't believe you, but say that.
Right.
At least I can buy that. I can live with that. You start telling me about the field conditions. It was 27 seconds left in the game. It didn't bother you all game. Now all of a sudden it bothered you on this one play. Didn't bother you on the play before.
Yeah.
Bothered you here.
Yeah.
Can't trust
the offense to execute on such a wet play. So we'll go to overtime and expect my defense to execute, expect my offense to then go execute. Like, it's so dumb. He's just scared in the moment. And that comment, you're right. Say, I trust my defense. Say,
and I don't agree with you, but right. I can't kill you.
We had the momentum there. I want to keep the momentum. If I feel like we were the better team in the last few minutes of the game, I don't know.
Yeah, I disagree, but okay. At least there's an argument.
Yeah.
Once you start telling me, I didn't deliberate at all. The wet field was, what? The wet, what? And you didn't deliberate? Well, that's a problem.
Oh,
why didn't
God.
You deliberate?
Oh, my God.
Did he give an answer as to why he called timeout, which only resulted in giving the Chiefs time to score in regulation?
I didn't. I also didn't. I don't know if anybody asked that
I'm
in
joking.
The post.
He probably didn't.
No, because somebody should have asked that, but I think it gets washed away because the Chiefs didn't score then. They just scored
in overtime.
Because
he made another dumb decision right after it.
That's true. Yes. He compounded.
He's a compounder.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I wasn't going to mention that here at 3 o'clock, but that... I just couldn't take it. That comment's just ridiculous. The wet field. 888-808-1019. As the Chiefs go 8-0, they are now undefeated. When you go 8-0, it's technically undefeated. They are undefeated. Nobody can stop them, even though they are a lesser team than they've been. Like, we said the same thing last year. This is like playing out exactly like last year for the Chiefs, where we don't really believe in them. The offense isn't really clicking. Patrick Mahomes is throwing more interceptions than touchdowns. They're lacking in the wide receiver, now that they've obviously traded for DeAndre Hopkins, but they're lacking at the wide receiver position. Early on in the season, Kelce isn't really doing anything, although now he's coming along and had double-digit receptions in back-to-back games, and it feels like they're just getting better, and they haven't played their best, and yet they're 8-0. They're going to be the class of this AFC, and right now, I don't know if there's anybody tough enough, smart enough, good enough to beat them. And I don't. If you can't beat them now, I don't know when, and that started with the Ravens week one. It started with the Ravens week one, but I wasn't going to do that until I heard that audio. Let's get to the Yankees now as we yelled about the Giants and Daniel Jones still being the quarterback. It makes no sense to me. Daniel Jones needs to be benched because he could get hurt. And it's not just about quarterback. Like, it's not just about having drafting a quarterback. I just want the best pick. Even if the Giants and Brian Daboll don't believe in one of these quarterbacks, somebody will. And I can either get a great player or the ability to trade down and get multiple picks. Like, it's within the best. The best case scenario is to get as high a good pick as you can. And the worst case scenario is Daniel Jones gets hurt and is on the roster next year and his contract's on the roster next year. There's best case and worst case. Sitting Daniel Jones helps you with getting to the best case and avoiding the worst case. What are we doing at 2-7? I'll never understand it. But yeah, I mean, it's not even just about the quarterback. Get the best pick. And then even if you don't like the quarterback, somebody will, and you'll trade and get multiple good picks. You'll be in a better situation the more you lose. You can't avoid that. You can't tell me it's not true. It is true. At 2-7, the best thing for the Giants to do is to lose and avoid the damaging injury that Daniel Jones is waiting to have happen, running the ball the way he does, taking on contact the way he does. That touchdown was awesome yesterday or Sunday. I love him, you know, taking on a defensive end, eating the contact, moving on, getting into the end zone, and then, you know, showing emotion. I loved it. I respect the hell out of Daniel Jones. But that's the kind of play that's going to get him hurt. He's got a neck injury that's cost him two different long stretches, including ending a season 2-3 years ago. Like, he's not good enough to lead them, no matter how much that great play, how much I respect that play and his toughness. He's not good enough. Please end it. And let's end something else. And again, we'll do this in a second. Let's just get to the Yankees first and Gerrit Cole situation, which was as bizarre. I mean, just bizarre. It's a little bizarre what happened with Gerrit Cole and Scott Boras, who has been taking L's now. And add the L's. And that's really the thing that comes out of it for me. Scott Boras was the super agent for forever. Right? For forever. You got Scott Boras, you're going to get the best deal possible. You're going to get the most money possible. You knew he was going to be an impossible guy to work with as far as the team goes. Like, you hiring Scott Boras for your agent signals business. And I guess it still does, that you mean business. But over the last year and a half, he has taken more L's and has lost. I mean, last year was the offseason of his discontent. I mean, it was every single player he tried to get signed, it was a disaster. Like, he had everybody. He had Bellinger. He had Snell. He had Chapman. He had Montgomery. Like, all of them didn't get anywhere near what they were hoping to get. All of them waited for the final moments to finally take a contract for much less and shorter term. And now Snell's hitting the free agent market again. Montgomery had a disastrous year with Arizona. Chapman has already re-signed a big-time contract. I'm surprised the Giants gave him to be their third baseman for years moving forward. And Bellinger had a down year and opted back into a relatively lesser contract than he was hoping for, coming off an incredible year last year. So, like, it's just been L after L after L. And even against Brian Cashman, who can't even get a win when he takes his team to the World Series, even when he gets the Yankees back in the World Series, he's taking L's. Even against Brian Cashman, who can do no right in this market with the media and the fan base, even when he gets to the World Series, it's not good enough. And we're talking about the issues with this team and how flawed it was. Even against Brian Cashman, the great Scott Boras has taken L's. And that's what happened with this situation. I mean, pretty much he played a staring contest with Brian Cashman and the New York Yankees, and Brian Cashman didn't blink. So Cole opts out of his contract, which we've talked about forever. We knew he would do, at least I expected he would do. I guess there was some thought maybe he wouldn't after this year, considering the elbow injury, the limited amount of innings he pitched, and some of his numbers coming down, his age, but off of last year's Cy Young, I mean, the talk this time was he's going to opt out. Nobody knew about the clause that the Yankees could just add a year and nullify the opt-out, because if you did, it was like, well, that's a no-brainer. So it was like a no-brainer. And as soon as the season ended, it felt like, well, we're going to exercise this opt-out. We put it in there to see, and we'll talk to the Yankees. But clearly, whether it was Cole who told his agent, forget this, I'm not playing a game of chicken. I'm not hitting free agency and seeing what I can get. I want to be a New York Yankee. Or whether it was just Scott Boras playing a game of chicken, figuring the Yankees wouldn't want to do it. And then once they said they were uncomfortable, and that's what Brian Cashman came out today and said at the meetings in San Antonio, when asked by reporters, he said, look, we were uncomfortable at his age to give him a fifth year at $36 million. So he opts out, figuring the Yankees will do it. When the Yankees don't, either Cole himself just told his agent, forget it, I'm not playing games, I want to be here, or Scott Boras looked around, talked to enough people, and said, you know what, I don't know if you're going to get this on the free agent market. And the Yankees and Gerrit Cole came to the decision to pretend like it never happened. It was exactly like George Costanza quitting. He just showed up the next day and said, forget it. He opted out. The deadline came, and he said, let's just forget this whole thing. Let's pretend I didn't opt out. And the Yankees were like, okay, cool. And rightfully so. I'm glad the Yankees didn't hold him to the fire and say, well, now you're coming back for less money or anything like that. That would have been stupid. It would have seemed petty. Let's just pretend he didn't opt out. I've said it from the beginning. Gerrit Cole needed to be on this team. I don't see a path for this team's starting rotation to be good enough to win a championship without Gerrit Cole. It would have been very difficult, especially if you're going to go sign Juan Soto. I don't know what Corbin Burns is going to do. I don't know what Blake Snell is going to do. I don't know if they could even pitch here in New York. Blake Snell's another guy, doesn't give you innings. He was great in the second half of last year, but I have no idea what he's going to do for the New York Yankees. I have no idea what Corbin Burns is going to do for the New York Yankees. And while I'm concerned about the last year or so of this Cole contract, I feel pretty confident for a guy who's been as durable as any pitcher in baseball, that he's going to come back from this injury, have a full offseason to recoup, rest, have a full spring training, and get in shape for this coming season, and to be pretty damn good. The guy was still throwing 98 miles an hour on his 105th pitch in the World Series, where he gave up one run in 2/3 innings. So I am more than happy the New York Yankees brought back Gerrit Cole. The whole situation seems bizarre, and the conversation now with Scott Boras is he's obviously got Juan Soto. And I was talking about this last year leading into what we knew would be the Juan Soto free agency. As we hear from different people like Andy Martino, who was reporting for SNY, saying some of the things I've been saying, that he believes the Juan Soto situation goes like this. He likes it here with the Yankees. Ultimately, you know, it's not like I got to be a Yankee, but all things considered, sure, why not stay? I enjoyed it here. It's not going to be about every single dollar. If it is, he'll go. But if the Yankees come close, if the Yankees show love and give him respect and pretty much come go right there with the Mets or whoever else was high bidder, considering the Yankees provide a place to win, considering he was comfortable here, considering he likes everybody here, considering he had the best year of his career here and played with Aaron Judge, that if the money is somewhat negligible and they're in the same ballpark, that there is a chance that Juan Soto would take less money to be with the New York Yankees, as reported by Andy Martino. And again, he doesn't know, I don't know, nobody knows. But everybody's been out there saying he's going to take every penny, every last penny. That's all he cares about is the money, blah, 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 blah. The way he answered the questions, the tone and tenor of those conversations and answers at the end of the World Series post-game press conference. Like, all that guarantees he wants money, blah, 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 blah. I could see a scenario where the New York Yankees do not give the most money and still get him, and I just painted it out. But here's my one thing now. I wonder the relationship between Soto and Boras, because obviously he's been his client for forever. They turned down $400 million famously from the Washington Nationals. They've been gearing up for this moment for years. For years they've been waiting for this. And Boras knows exactly what he has. He knows the exact type free agent he has. I mean, everybody does, but it is not lost on Boras that this is a unique situation to get a player this good and this young to hit free agency. It is a once-in-a-generation, once-every-30-years type free agent, especially at this age. Not only is he a once-in-a-generational type player, but he started so young to hit the free agent market so young is unprecedented almost. And I'm just wondering, depending on the relationship between Soto and Boras, My biggest fear as a Yankee fan is Boris is fed up with the L's. And I don't know if you would call it an L if he signs a lesser deal with the New York Yankees. If he signs a $700 million deal with the New York Yankees and then it comes out that the Mets offered $750 and he didn't turn it down, and he turned it down for lesser money with the Yankees, I don't know if that's an L for Scott Boras, but I just think right now he is pissed and he wants the biggest number possible. And coming off of last year's embarrassment, and that's what it was, Scott Boras has been humbled the last year and a half. I mean, this is a guy who shows up to all these winter meetings and GM meetings, and he's given press conferences. He's an agent who gives press conferences. He has a gaggle of reporters around him, and he gives pun after pun and clever, witty comment after what he deems to be clever and witty comments, and he holds court, and we see him at the Angel games in his box. I mean, he is the super agent of super agents. He is Jerry Maguire. He is the guy. He is Scott Boras. He holds press conferences at winter meetings. He is the guy. And he was utterly embarrassed last year. That wasn't, and it wasn't just an off year. It was supposed to be his great year. He had the entire market cornered. He had every big time free agent other than Ohtani, obviously. Other than Ohtani, he had every big free agent on the market. He had in the top 10 free agents that hit the market, Ohtani was one. Boras had 2 through 9. And all of them ended up having disastrous off-seasons and signing well into spring training and taking short-year deals that they could hopefully hit free agency again. And all of it's been an out-and-out disaster. And Brian Cashman, who can't do anything right in this city at the moment, even making it to the World Series, just stared him in the face and said, no thanks, Scott. Whatever, no, we're not going to do it. And then he had to come crawling back to the New York Yankees just to get the same deal he opted out of, the 4-year, $144 million deal. It's an embarrassing moment for Scott Boras, followed by an embarrassing offseason last year. And I'm just wondering how he's going to handle the one situation that's almost impossible to take an L. Like, you can't lose this. This is the golden goose. This is the greatest free agent of all time. And I'm just wondering if, as a Yankee fan, if I'm trying to play this game of how close do they have to get to the Mets? And is there a process or a way where they could not be the top bidder? Because I don't know how any Yankee fan could honestly say they will be. Like, I think they should be. Like, I heard Evan having this whole conversation. Both teams should be saying the same thing. The Yankees fans should be saying there's no reason why Hal shouldn't be the top bidder. And the Met fans should be saying there is no reason why Steve Cohen shouldn't be the top bidder. And if both of those are true and both of these owners have their hearts set on being the top bidder, there's one guy with more money than the other. It's, if you come to a snowball fight and one guy has 13 billion snowballs and one guy's got 5 billion snowballs, who's going to win the snowball fight? Like, I could say until I'm blue in the face, there's no reason the Yankees shouldn't be the top bidder. But the fact of the matter is, if Steve Cohen is determined to be the top bidder, he will be. Like, we have to come to terms with that as a New York Yankee fan. Like, it has nothing to do with revenue. I could scream, and I have, about the idea that the Yankees are 18th in Major League Baseball. 18th. In percentage of revenue spent. That's embarrassing. I'll be the first to tell you. I've defended Hal. I do think that he's spent enough money to win. But the idea that the percentage of money made and that goes back into the team, he's 18th. 17 other teams in Major League Baseball put more money of what they make back into the team. That's embarrassing. That's a terrible job from Hal Steinbrenner. Does he have to be one? I don't know, but he can't be 18th. Now, I understand, again, the percentage of money, he's still putting more money than every other team other than maybe the Dodgers and the Mets, but he's making more. Put more money into the team, we all agree. And I'm not saying he should stop or not get into it just because Steve Cohen's there, but we all understand what the deal is. So as a Yankee fan, if I'm trying to sign Juan Soto and I'm thinking to myself, how do the Yankees get Juan Soto to come back to the New York Yankees? There's going to have to be a level of closeness to whatever the Mets offer and some sort of leeway in what we determine to be Juan Soto's thinking. It can't be about every penny, because if it's about every penny and nothing else, he will not be a Yankee, unless Steve Cohen determines that he's not about it, which is another conversation we can have, Met fans, at 888-808-1019. But one of the things that throws a wrinkle, as opposed, not just does Juan Soto want every dollar, you know, not just can the Yankees come close, not just, hey, does he like New York and the Mets provide that, plus the building he said is his favorite place to hit and everything else, blah, 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 blah. It's also, is Scott Boras now not just pissed off at the Yankees and Brian Cashman necessarily for this transaction, which is minimal and really no longer a talking point once it ended, but is he just tired of taking L's? Is he pissed off, and is he looking to make sure Juan Soto gets the biggest amount he can? And is Juan Soto enough of his own man? And I'm not trying to knock him or say that he isn't, but you get into these situations, you trust this guy, you've worked with this GM for forever, I mean this agent for forever, and he tells you, hey, look, this is what's going to set up not only you, but this sets up everybody else in the entire, you know, Players Association, where it's our job and our responsibility to set the number. This is going to help Santander. This is going to help Corbin Burns. This is going to help Christian Walker. This is going to help every other player. You're going to be the guy who carries the torch for this entire Major League Baseball community. And it's your responsibility to do so. That's a compelling argument. And I'm just wondering how much Scott Boras wants that, considering loss.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought two wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
After loss after loss.
Need to get out of a meeting? Call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS Live on Paramount Plus.
Oh, you know what I wanted to comment? I just saw the stories I was flicking through. Bob Costas retired from play-by-play and doing baseball play-by-play. And I just want to say, like, obviously, I was, along with a lot of other people, critical of Bob's performance in the last two, and particularly this one, ALDSs that the Yankees competed in 2 years ago and then this year. But that doesn't change the fact that Bob is an all-time great. I mean, that's why I think that's part of it, too, because I expected, you know, so much from Bob, because so much of my childhood, I mean, Bob Costas was the man. Bob Costas brought a level of gravitas to every broadcast, and I just wanted to mention it because I was very critical of him. So I wanted to just say that, you know, listen, I just saw an interview he did with MLB Network, and he talked about the inability to string together performances or moments of being as good as he's always been. And I don't, some of the calls weren't great. It's just that, you know, and not to get into why I criticized him, but he just didn't have a great series. It became a little bit of a labor to listen to it, but he had an incredible career. I mean, Bob Costas, his name is associated with broadcasting and sports, and I've always had nothing but respect and revere for the great Bob Costas, and I'm glad he's able to, you know, walk away and enjoy the rest of his life doing whatever he's going to do. I'm sure he's still going to be around the game and still around doing different things. But good for Bob to walk away. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
Yeah, come on, Chris.
Yes, what's up?
Boris absorbed a lot of L's the last year and a half.
Yeah.
But you know what? Maybe it was time that he did get put in his place, meaning that he shouldn't always be the one to get everything.
No, absolutely. The only problem is he just got put in his place, but he's got the biggest, you know, chip at the table. I mean, Juan Soto is the biggest free agent in history. Him and Otani the last 2 years, you're talking about the biggest free agents in history. So, I mean, he's got a winning hand right now.
Yeah, he's got a winning hand right now. But what Otani did, what the Dodgers did last year, is going to be revisited in the next contract negotiations. Am I correct?
No. In the next... maybe they'll talk about
it. Oh, it will be, because they're not going to feel like they divert $680 million. Where did that come from?
Crazy.
And that was done for one reason and one reason only, Yamamoto. And they got him.
Yeah, I mean that, and I'm sure that, you know, Otani is going to save money by not paying taxes. I know the number, they're saying it's going to be more like $400 million, but he avoids taxes, so I don't know. Maybe he breaks out even. But yes, he definitely did it because he wanted the big contract. He's making a ton of money. His New Balance contract, you know, all the money he makes off the field is ridiculous. So he was willing to... He had the gravitas of the $700 million contract, and he was able to defer the money, avoid taxes, and help him
get
his buddy and help win a championship, which already year one, job done. He's got his World Series title.
Right, he did. And the thing is, with Soto, what do you think it's going to take to keep him here, and what do you think that Uncle Stevie's going to offer?
I don't know. I don't know what Steve's going to offer. That I don't know. I mean, is there a limit? I'm sure there's a limit. I don't know. If it comes down to a bidding war with the Yankees, is Steve Cohen going to lose it? I don't know. I find it hard to believe. I would think a bidding war leads to the Mets. That's why everyone thinks he's going to be a Met, and I understand why. We'll see how far Steve Cohen goes. Now, what is it going to take to get him? Like, I think if the Yankees offered him right now, and I heard Evan say this, and it's a nice round number, that's why. If you offer him $15 million at $50 million per and give him $750 million, I would think that gets it done. But I think the Yankees need... This is what the Yankees should do, in my opinion. Like I would call him, obviously. First, I'd call him. That's what I would do. I'd call him. I would say to him, look, I would almost say, look, I'm not going to win a bidding war. If you want to be here, give me what you need. Just like he said to Aaron Judge. Like, you want to play the bidding war game? I understand it. Go out there. Know that I'm willing to give you, like, whatever it needs. You call me when you finally get your final thing, and you give me what you need. But I can't, like, play this game where Boris calls me and says, well, Steve just offered this, and now, okay, I'll offer that. Oh, well, now Steve just upped it. I can't play that game. So if you call me and tell me it's going to take $700 million for you to be a Yankee, let me say yes or no. Like, that's it. Because the bidding war doesn't work. It just doesn't work for the Yankees because they can't win it. Now, I know that seems pretty simple, and I don't know if Juan Soto has any interest in playing the game like that, but, like, as far as I'm concerned, I would offer him something outrageous. I would offer him something in the $680 or $700 million range, knowing that's what it's going to take. And then if Steve Cohen ups it and they come back to me and say, well, Steve Cohen just upped it, I would say, well, look, what do you need? What do you want to be a Yankee? And we can make that happen. But I don't know what it's going to take. It's going to take a lot. It's going to take 13, 14 years. It's going to take at least $45 to $47 million at the bare minimum. Bare minimum. Bare minimum is $45, $46 million at 14 years. 13, 14 years. That's the bare minimum. So let's say 13 at 45. And that's 585, and that's not even going to do it. That's not even going to do it. So let's say what's 700 divided by 13? That's 53. 700. 15 years at $46 million per to get the $700 million? Something like that. I mean, he's going to get that considering how he played in the postseason, considering how young he is, considering how many teams are interested, considering what Otani just did for the Dodgers. Like, I just think that's the kind of money he's going to get. And if I were the Yankees, I don't want to get into a bidding war. I saw reports that they should put a time deadline on. This is the one thing I disagree with. Like, I've seen a couple people say, well, I would put a deadline on it, and I tell them I need to know by this because I got to go about building my team, and if I wait for you, who knows what happens, and I can lose this guy or that guy. I mean, I guess that sort of, I understand that thought process on some level, but let me ask you a question. Why would Santander and some of the other big names is free agent not wait for Juan Soto to sign? Like, you look at Santander's numbers this year, right? He hit 235, which is about 50 points lower in batting average. But he had 44 home runs. He drove in 102 RBIs. Those are not that far off, if at all, from Juan Soto numbers. Now, Juan Soto's better on base percentage. I'm not comparing. He's a much better player. He's much younger. I'm just saying he hit 44 home runs and drove in 102 RBIs. Why would he not wait until Juan Soto signs some ungodly contract that says, hey, Juan Soto hit the same amount of home runs, drove in the same amount of RBIs. I know he's a little bit younger, and I'm not saying I'm just as good, but he just signed for $48 million per. He just signed for $50 million per. Why would I sign a contract for $28, $30 million per when I could say, let me see what Soto gets, and then use that contract to try and justify my contract? Not saying he'll get it, but who wouldn't wait for that? Like, I think the idea that all these guys are going to go before Juan Soto signs isn't true. They're going to wait to have Juan Soto set the market. He's going to set the market at such an ungodly number. Why would they take anything before Juan Soto signs? Right now, we could speculate. I just speculated myself that Juan Soto could get $45 million or $46 million a year for $13 million a year for 13 years. That's $589. Like, there's speculation Juan Soto signs a $600 million contract. That's fair. That's within reason. But what if he signs a $700 million contract? Why wouldn't I wait to see how nuts that number gets before I determine what I want or what my value is? Because, again, like, I would think that the pivot for the Yankees is either Bregman or Santander. Like, Santander is going to say, I know I'm not Juan Soto, but I just put up Juan Soto numbers this year. He's double what I am? You want to pay me 25? You're offering me 25, 26 a year, and he's getting 50? No. I hit one more home run than he did. Nope. I'm just telling. That's why I don't know if I'm worried about the deadline, because I can't imagine a lot of these big-time free agents who would be the pivot. The pivot for the Yankees aren't minimal guys. The pivot for the Yankees aren't these tertiary guys that are, you know. I think you have more of a problem with that market going first, and then when you sign Juan Soto, some of your lesser options could be gone. But the pivot, if you lose Juan Soto, I think those guys are going to be there because they're waiting to see how crazy the crazies get. Wouldn't you? What's the rush? But let Juan Soto like set the market at $700 million for a right fielder. Then I'll sign. 888-808-1019. So I'm not worried about the deadline. I'm just worried about whether or not Juan Soto wants to play this game and wants to see how high he can get and wants to set the market and set, you know, the highest contract of all time and be the guy who raises all time, you know, be the tide that raises all ships and helps get Santander a big time contract and helps Bregman get a big time contract and helps the next guy and next year get a big time contract. I mean, and be able to say I got more money than Otani, and like that's, and Scott Boras, the agent, finally get to put last year behind him and say I just signed Juan Soto to the biggest deal anyone's ever heard of. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the Joe Kelly stuff. So Joe Kelly went on a podcast called Baseball Isn't Boring with Rob Bradford, who's a host on sports radio in Boston. And it's actually an Odyssey podcast. And we had heard him on the field right after the World Series talking about Yankee defense and, you know, if you just wait long enough, the Yankees will make critical errors. And then you saw the scouting report in Joel Sherman's article about how the Dodgers viewed the Yankees and some of the flaws the Yankees had in outfield shifting and Jazz Chisholm not being in the right spot at the right time on relays and everything else with the New York Yankees. That is fair, right? Those are the actual thinkings of the Los Angeles Dodgers. That's fair. And we all have seen those be issues for this Yankee team. But I got a real problem with Joe Kelly and the reaction to it from a lot of Yankee fans. So here's what Joe Kelly had to say on the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast.
You said you played the Yankees. So did you guys know? Was that sort of the thing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We were saying every single game, just let them throw the ball to infield. They can't make a play. I mean, you saw Shohei got an extra base going to third on sloppy Gleyber play. It's well known. We all knew. I mean, we're the Dodgers. We know every little detail. But I mean, past that, it was a fun series. I mean, they almost snagged a couple wins. You know what I mean? But I mean, if it was like the NCAA, like basketball, baseball, hockey, or football. I mean, like it was just a mismatch from the get go. Like we had a playoff re-ranking. Like they might be ranked eighth or ninth best playoff team. You know what I mean? Like you're putting the Padres ahead of them. You're putting the Phillies ahead of them. You're putting the Mets ahead of them. You're putting the Braves ahead of them, and the Braves just got unlucky because they had to play that doubleheader. You're putting, I mean, the Guardians played like crap, but the Guardians played better baseball around. Like, it was just a complete mismatch, and it's kind of the same feeling from 2018 when we had to go play the Dodgers. Like, the Red Sox were just the way better team. So all we knew is that we just had to play regular Dodger baseball.
So you just had to play regular Dodger baseball. The Yankees actually almost jumped up and snagged a few games. You know what else I found funny in there is that Cleveland's actually better, which makes me feel better about the Yankees getting to the World Series because I thought that was just a formality that Cleveland sucks and that the Yankees shouldn't even give themselves a pat on the back for making it to the World Series because all they did was beat the Guardians. Who knew they beat a better team? Everyone says the Yankees can't beat a better team come the postseason. According to Joe Kelly, hey, the Yankees did beat a better team. The Guardians are better because they sure do play that defense. Meanwhile, they're dropping pop-ups and mismanaging plays at second base. But sure, no. Like, that is a bunch of absolute garbage from a guy looking to bash the New York Yankees. That's plain. That's just bottom line. You want to talk about some of the different stuff that has hampered this team and other teams might have in their scouting reports? That's fair. To re-rank them and say they're the eighth or ninth best playoff team, that the Braves are better because they only got unlucky because of a doubleheader, it's absolute garbage. It's absolute garbage. It's unprofessional. When the Yankees beat teams, what would you think if a Yankee came out and said, look, you know, we all knew that the Cleveland Guardians just weren't good enough, and if you could pitch them in the bullpen, as good as the numbers might be, you know, they'll eventually throw you a fastball, and we were just waiting for it, and they're really not very good, and it was a mismatch the entire series, and they didn't belong on the field with us. What would we say if a player came out after a series from the New York Yankees and just trashed the other team? That's an absolute joke, and a guy looking to settle scores who's pissed off about God knows what or just hates the Yankees for whatever reason. Doesn't mean there's not a hint of truth in it. Sure, there's a hint of truth in it. But that's absolute garbage. That's just a guy looking to settle scores and put down the Yankees after what was a much closer World Series than that. Yeah, they won the game, almost jumped up. You got the manager of the Dodgers talking with Mookie Betts and saying, I can say this now publicly, I was real nervous to go back to L.A. Game 6. Even though we had Yamamoto, I was nervous to go back to L.A. for Game 6 because then the noise gets real. Well, what is he worried about if the Yankees are trash? What is he worried about if they could beat the Yankees with both hands tied behind their backs? What is he worried about if it's such a mismatch? What is he worried about? Joe Kelly went out there and just said a bunch of garbage just to trash the Yankees, who are in the World Series, by the way. But I get that, and that's fine, right? I think it's unprofessional. I think it's ridiculous, but I don't care. That's Joe Kelly just, to the victor go the spoils, right? That's fine. But what bothers me a little bit, and I have to admit, it bothers me a little bit, because when the Joel Sherman story comes out, right, and he reports that the Dodgers had a scouting report of the Yankees being a poor base running team and the Yankees being a poor defensive team and the Yankees not doing, you know, everything well, and that if you force them to make plays, there's a good chance they can't make them, right? That's an honest-to-God scouting report of a team that we've seen a lot of those things. I don't have a problem with that, and I understand the fan base pointing to it and saying, yeah, you see, this is frustrating because this is how we view them too. And a lot of this is true, and it's disappointing that, you know, ultimately they succumb to those scouting reports, and eventually the Yankees did mismanage and make the bad plays and cost themselves a chance to win a championship. I understand that. But when a guy comes out and absolutely dogs our team and trashes the Yankees and throws in a bunch of extra stuff. There was also a clip in there about, and I didn't play the whole thing because it was getting long. I didn't realize how long it was. But he also talked about, well, you know, we're the Dodgers. We have stars too, but our stars aren't lazy. So now Aaron Judge is lazy. Juan Soto is lazy. Gerrit Cole is lazy, clearly, for not covering first base. So our stars are lazy. Even the Guardians are better. Everyone else in the postseason was better. They beat, you know, it was unfortunate for Cleveland that they played so crappy. Otherwise, they would have beat the Yankees because they're a better baseball team, too. The Yankees were lucky to get to the World Series. And, hey, it was a fun little series because they almost snagged a game or two. That is absolute garbage. And the idea that the so many Yankee fans who hit me up, so many Yankee fans I see, and again, it's not every Yankee fan, but so many Yankee fans are like, look, preach, brother, preach. I'm right there with you. He's saying nothing but the truth. Like, that bothers the hell out of me. Since when are we comfortable with other teams taking shots at us? Like, do we hate this team so much? This team that sent that were in the World Series, that we were celebrating Juan Soto hitting a home run to send the Yankees to the World Series since the first time in 15 years. Do we despise this team, this manager, this GM, everybody on it so much, that fifth inning, everything so much that it's okay? Not only is it not a big deal that other guys come out of the woodwork, guys who didn't even pitch in the postseason, guys who aren't good enough to really be playing for the Dodgers in the postseason, that everybody can take shots at the Yankees, and the fans not only are okay with it, they're thrilled about it. Embarrassing. Because like I made the analogy about brothers and everything. If you might pick on your brother and say, oh, four eyes or whatever, if he wear glasses or whatever the case may be. You might make fun of your brother for being short or for the clothes he wears or the things he likes or whatever else. You might pick on your brother. I've had a brother. I have a brother. I've known that relationship. Obviously, I have two sons. I could see them and everything. But if you go to the bus stop and the bully walks over and he starts making fun of your brother, you don't turn to him and go, I've been saying the same thing for years. You nailed it. You got him good. And that's what I feel the Yankee fan is doing. And it's just, like, it's just bothering me. I don't know why it's bothering me, but it's just bothering me. There are flaws with this team, and they need to clean it up. No one is saying otherwise. And there is some truth to what Kelly is saying. There's a lot of truth into the Dodgers scouting report on the New York Yankees. It clearly cost them. We all watched it. But a guy with vitriol and venom in his words comes out to stomp on the Yankees after beating them and being that unprofessional that he needs to go out there and just absolutely trounce the Yankees, and the fan base is thrilled about it? And the fan base is there cheering him on, saying, I know. Like, of course, there's some truth in it. There was truth. I remember when the Red Sox made the Evil Empire comment about the Yankees. Of course, there's some truth to it. I don't remember it being met with such, yeah, you tell them, Henry. You tell them, Red Sox. They're the evil empire, and these championships are fraudulent because all they do is buy them. Thank you. Thank you for someone finally having the courage to say it. Man, I know we're frustrated, but cheering on a guy taking cheap shots at the team, we can say it. We can be frustrated by it. We can dog on Brian Cashman and Aaron Boone and the Yankee staff and the Yankees defense and base running. But can we not applaud it when others take cheap shots? I just don't get it. And again, that's not the entire fan base. But if you are one of those fans, and I see plenty of you, rethink what we're doing here. The team was in the World Series. I'm frustrated too, and they got stuff to clean up. But the Dodgers are going to beat them, really watch them beat themselves, and then take victory laughs on podcasts and absolutely dog the team, and we're going to go great? Okay. Eddie in Rockland, what's up, Eddie?
Hey, Christopher, what's happening?
What's going on, buddy? How are you?
All right. I hear you, you know, waving the white flag and hiding in the hole, and, you know, you wanted the Giants to tank and
yes.
bench Daniel Jones because of his contract and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you obviously that means you want to run it back with Shane and Daboll. And
it doesn't mean I obviously want to do it, but that's what it's what it sounds like.
Right, that's what that's what it sounds like.
Well, that's what
right?
it sounds like from the Giants. It, I'm saying it sounds like from the Giants. That's what's going to happen.
Right, but from you, the same thing. You rather tank and get the player and reset, right?
And yes, and if I'm 100%, and if I'm going to do that. That's the one reason why Dable and Shane got hired is because they were able to do that in Buffalo. So it seems it seems like the one strength I know.
What did they do in Buffalo? Wait a minute. What did they do in Buffalo?
They helped draft and develop Josh Allen.
But he had no skills.
Of course, he had skills.
He wasn't at the top of the draft.
Does Daniel Jones have skills?
And wasn't he at the top of the draft? Let me get to the meat of my question.
Okay, let's get to the meat of your question. Well, stop right. diverting to the vegetables, buddy. No one's stopping you.
As you see, you know, the Baker Mayfield playing better and Darnold playing better.
Yep.
And all these quarterbacks that were thrown to the garbage heap.
Yep.
How come you don't press more on these coaches? Mm-hmm. You know. If you were Mara Jr.
Yeah.
And you gave $750 million to a GM and a coach, and in 3 years they're worse than they were, you're out the door, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, I understand that you're trying to like get me on this Dable thing, and under no set of circumstances if I come out.
You've been dancing his pom poms the highest. And you don't see the problem, obviously.
No, I do see a problem. Well, first, a couple of things that you said. That first off, one, they are not better. They are not worse today than they were when they took over. They're worse than their first year when they made the playoffs with these two and actually had a winning season for the first time in forever under Dable and Shane. They're worse than
they were. The team is lost. Don't you see the team is lost?
Yeah, I totally agree. The team stinks. That's why I don't want to play the quarterback.
He's coaching on the fly.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not here to defend Brian Dable. I'm not telling you that. The owner gave him a vote of confidence. I've been saying since the beginning of the season, when everybody else said it was ridiculous that he's on the hot seat, I've been saying, no, he should be on the hot seat. The offense has to be better. But now that he's got the vote of confidence, now that I don't know if he's going to get fired, if he's not going to get fired, then what has he got to lose? Lose the games. You're not coaching for your job. It's not about winning the football games. Go out and then to say that, you know...
I'm just saying because
you keep talking, you keep diverting the conversation. Every time I try to give you an answer for one of the things you're saying, you just pivot and go, let me talk about the meat. I don't know what you're talking about. And the idea that if you remember the draft class with Josh Allen, he was without question regarded as a huge question mark, a huge project. He was the project. Lamar Jackson was, I don't even know if he's a quarterback, so that's clearly a project too. I get that. But this was a guy, you know, playing in a conference that nobody believed in against competition. Nobody believed in. And sure, he could throw the ball, you know, 90 yards. But what is he? He wasn't very accurate. I don't know what he can be. He was a project. And that project, whether you want to admit it or not, was handed to Brian Dable. He was the one who took on the project. And the year at now he's gotten it back going, obviously. I'm not trying to say that Allen has been terrible without him, but the first year without him was a step back for Josh Allen. But, yeah, of course Josh Allen's an immense talent. I'm not saying that he's a miracle worker and that he could take any lousy quarterback and turn him into an all-pro. Of course there was ability with Josh Allen, but he was a project. There's ability with everybody. Zach Wilson has ability. They couldn't get it out of him. Daniel Jones even has ability. They broke him. All these quarterbacks have ability. It's about getting it out of them and teaching them and coaching them up, especially a young prospect and a project of the level of Josh Allen. You can't deny that what Brian Dable did with him. And if we're going to keep him, by all means, if they fire him tomorrow, I would think it's a mistake midseason, but I don't care. I don't care. Fire him tomorrow, Eddie. I don't care. I am not here pounding the table to keep Brian Dable. I've never said that. I just don't think you have to fire him. And if they're going to keep him, I think you could argue to keep him. But if they are, I want him to have a young quarterback that he can develop because I know that's the one thing he's been successful at. That's all I'm saying. And if he ends up getting fired without having an opportunity to do that, It's going to feel like a wasted hire. But yeah, has he done a good job this year, last year? No. The first year he did a great job. These last 2 years have been terrible. No doubt, terrible. And the same thing with the GM. The GM walked into two top first picks, top 10 picks. He's got an offensive lineman who can't play despite injuries to the offensive line. And he's got a D-end who, yeah, I mean, listen, is a decent edge rusher, probably good enough to pick up his fifth-year option, but isn't a game wrecker, isn't a game changer, is showing maybe, two games where he has been? Like, he's not what you should be, a top five pick. So those are supposed to be home run picks. One's an out-and-out disaster, and the other one's a nice little player who, if you picked up in the second round, you're patting yourself on the back for, but not a top five or six pick, you're not. So I get it. He's got a third-round pick and a wide receiver. When Neighbors goes down, still doesn't see the field. There's a bunch of issues. Right now, everyone's, real happy with the idea that they got, Phillips and Newbin in a draft class and some defensive backs who've panned out, but their number one guy in Banks, is freaking awful and taking plays off and making business decisions. There's a bunch wrong with this team and a bunch that this GM and coach have to answer for. But if they want stability and they're going to give this thing a chance, the worst thing they could do is stick them with their biggest mistake of all, Daniel Jones under a $40 million contract. End it.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.